Good morning. It's Tuesday, 9th of February. Our first reading today is Exodus 17 and 18. I'm still reading from Brother Harry Tennant's book, Moses, My Servant. I read, "The pillar of cloud moved on, this time to Rephidim. Despite every former sign, despite the fact that although they had travelled from the place where the manna first fell, yet the manna fell around their new encampment, Israel turned again against Moses and Aaron. Everyone was thirsty. There was no brook, no well, no sign of relief for the parched throats of their families and their cattle. With devastating thanklessness and shortness of memory, the Israelites cried, 'Give us water that we may drink,' and threatened violence to the servants of the Lord. Their cry was never lifted to God. They offered neither thanks nor pleadings to him. Moses is the butt of their complaints, and, secretly, the one to whom they attribute the marvels. He is almost their magician, though he has never given them cause to give him glory. Once again, he lays his heart bare before God, mentioning that it would not take much to move the Israelites to stoning him. The Lord comforts and proves his faith. He picks up the rod and gives summons to the elders of Israel to follow him as he walks to a great wall of rock there in Horeb. The sullen multitude watch. Moses' eyes look beyond the rock, beyond the rod, confident of the Lord's word, 'I will stand before thee there upon the rock.' Moses saw the Lord upon the rock as he looked with his inner eye. Not a word was spoken. The distant eyes of the congregation and the nearer faces of the elders followed the lone figure walking up to the rock face. Was there not an inner prayer? We cannot imagine that this solitary figure, with its back to Israel and its face to God, was inwardly silent. That great rock in the weary land cast its comforting shadow over Moses. The rock meant much to him. It filled his prayers and was expanded in his later experiences. When he bade farewell to Israel 40 years later, he said, 'Israel lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation.' But for his own and for our comfort, he wrote, 'He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty.'" Paul, in taking up the thought of the rock, which he carries beyond the Rephidim and into the daily journeying, says, "That rock was Christ." We need but a slight goad to our thinking to take up the train of thought. The smitten rock, the life-giving waters, the Lord God above it, and the exultant words of David, "The Spirit of the Lord spake by me, and his word was in my tongue. The God of Israel, the rock of Israel, spake to me. He that ruleth over men must be just. He shall be as the light of the morning, through clear shining after rain. Jesus the rock, the stone cut out of the mountain without hands, smitten for our sakes when we were dying of thirst in the wilderness of sin." Let us not take Moses' faith for granted. When he walked through the seething multitude, followed by the discontented elders, there was only a rock in front of him. No open vision. No word from God at the rock, no open glory. It was his faith that made the moment one of glory. Sometimes the Lord takes us by a similar, though lesser, path, leading us seemingly to the face of a heartless rock. Let us trust him. Let us see him standing above upon it and speak to him in prayer. So will the waters gush forth and relieve our parched souls. Thank you for listening.